Welcome.
Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Thursday, November 1st edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so. Let's go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Glad to have you with me as two professional handicappers join me today. The first, Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. Lots and lots of college football coming up with him. Second part of today's show, Tony George from Doc Sports. We'll chat a little bit of college basketball, a little bit of NBA, and then a couple of NFL games here for Week 9. Over at BangTheBook.com, where we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information, we've got you fully covered for everything going on here this week. Got both NASCAR previews up. We got a large NHL card here tonight that Parker Michaels did a fantastic job with over there. We've got college football power ratings, updated NFL power ratings from Danny Vorgs went up this morning. We've also got our NBA How to Bet previews going up every day. We've got just everything that you need to have success as a sports bettor over there at bangthebook.com. So please make sure that you go and check it out. It is the first of the month, which means a new round of monthly contests starting up over at bangthebook.com. Definitely go and check those out. You can also sign up for the Streaker contest, which goes, of course, daily, but the monthly contests are resetting here for today. So if you want to get involved in those, please make sure that you do. Then finally, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio, presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. Sign up at DSI using that promo code BANG100. You'll get a 100% deposit bonus for the sportsbook at BetDSI, where it's only a game until you bet it. We'll go ahead and jump right into today's first segment. That is with professional handicapper Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. Brad, how's it going today, man?
It's going well. How are you doing on this fine Thursday morning?
Doing very well, buddy. Good to hear your voice today, and good to chat some college football with you. It's what we love to do here on this segment. That's what we're going to go ahead and do here. And, Brad, I guess before we start diving into some of these individual games here, we got football on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thursday, Friday, pretty much football every day of the week now for the next few weeks. So does that change your process at all, knowing that you've got to get prepared for, Tuesday, Wednesday night action and whoever's playing on Thursday?
Not really. Maybe a little bit. It changes it to a certain extent, but it just knows the grindstone whenever the games are. They happen. I guess you got to speed up the process just a little bit, but my process pretty much has to be the same every week because my time because of the time crunch with me writing up every single game each week, both college and pro. To me, it doesn't matter when they play them. I got to write them up anyway, so it doesn't affect me too much.
All right, let's take a look at the first Saturday game on the board. This game, 321-322. Houston takes on SMU. Houston, and Dallas to take on SMU. But Houston is a 14-point favorite here in this one. What do you think about this game, Brad?
I got to lean on SMU here. My number's closer to about 11.5 or 12 on it. And, basically, Houston coming off that big win, I thought De'Aaron King played about as well as any quarterback's played in the game this season. I mean, when you throw for 400-plus yards and 5 touchdowns and you run for 100-plus and a couple of touchdowns, that's not too shabby, although I do think South Florida was one of the most overrated teams in the entire country. To me, it's all about if SMU can pick themselves off the mat. I mean, they had a tough loss last week in overtime against a pretty good Cincinnati team, and how they lost it was relatively heartbreaking. You don't see that too often in overtime. An 86-yard interception return touchdown cost them the game. If they can pick themselves back up, I'll be happy to take SMU plus 14.
Now, what do you think about a situation like that with Houston where, they get that big win, but at the same time, as you mentioned, South Florida was a little bit overrated. I mean, what was the line last week? I think it was Houston minus 8 or 9 in that type of range. So that kind of speaks to, what the thought process was there about South Florida. So what about Houston? I mean, this is a team now that's rattled off 5 in a row. They're playing very well this year. You've got Major Applewhite having this team going in the right direction. Is there a letdown factor potentially for them?
I mean, there could be, and they got a relatively big game on deck against Temple and still a big game at Memphis later on the season. It could be a little bit of a letdown for them, but I mean, obviously they're in the mix. There's a lot of good group of five teams this year compared to past years. So, I mean, they got to at least be thinking on the horizon, you know, possible major bowl bid, like Houston had a few years ago when Tom Herman was the coach. I would say it's a slightly downgrade after that big win. I don't think that you're going to get an A motivation effort out of Houston this week. But obviously, clearly the superior team. That's why they're laying two touchdowns on the road. And maybe that goes into it as well. I mean, you're clearly superior to SMU. And obviously, there's a little bit of it with being both teams being in-state. Yeah, I would say a little bit let down Houston, but the mindset for Houston's got to be that they got a lot of big goals out there and still out in front of them.
Well, that's why I wanted to touch on that a little bit, because we have a lot of those situations coming up here in the group of five over the next several weeks where maybe it could, in a traditional sense, be a letdown spot. But again, you're going for a division title. You're going for a conference bid in a or conference berth in a certain bowl game, stuff like that. So, you know, maybe in the group of five ranks, that doesn't apply as much as it could to some of the power five ranks. Although, of course, you've got some teams out there trying to win divisions, get to conference championship games as well. Speaking of a couple of those teams, how about game 323-324 here? Iowa takes on Purdue. Purdue opened a 1.5-point favorite here, but they're up to as high as 3 flat in the marketplace. A lot of places, though, 3 with reduced juice.
Yeah, I like Iowa here. You know, my number has Purdue closer to 1. A little surprised that you're catching the full field goal here with the Hawkeyes. But here's another game. You know, what teams pick themselves off the map? Because both teams suffered disappointing losses last week. Iowa throwing in the end zone late, throws a pick. Purdue clearly looked flat after the Buckeye game, as Michigan State pretty much took it to them there. You know, I trust Iowa. Why? Because they're one of the better road teams in college football. Iowa, 19-7-2 against the spread on the highway the last 6 years. Why? They run the football. They protect the football. They play great defense. I think that's more of the same here. Again, I just trust Iowa, as far as a more consistent performance. I'll take the Hawkeyes +3.
I think Purdue is such a polarizing team here, not just for this week, but kind of the rest of the way. I mean, they get that big win over Ohio State, and we'll talk about that Ohio State-Nebraska game here in a couple of minutes. But they get that big win, and then they do kind of fall victim to that letdown spot last week against Michigan State. I did like the Boilermakers in that game, did have a play on them. But the thing about that game was, you know, for Michigan State not going with Brian Lewerke, who's the guy that they did game plan for throughout the week, then they get Rocky Lombardi, who they weren't expecting. And we've seen that happen a lot. I mean, we kind of saw it with Brock Osweiler and the Dolphins when they took on the Bears. You do all this planning for one guy or one scheme or one set of plays, then you get thrown a curveball day of the game or maybe day before the game. And a lot of times a team that now has expectations does struggle a little bit. And I actually saw, you know, a buddy of mine, Matt Lindemann, mentioned on Twitter, you know, fade the injury move and you'd be able to retire. I'm paraphrasing what he said on Twitter, but that was exactly what happened last week. Purdue took a lot of money once Lewerke was ruled out, and then Michigan State was the team that came away with the win in that game. So, you know, there may be something to that about, you know, the injury move late right before kickoff, especially to somebody at the quarterback position. So I don't know how much we want to take away from Purdue last week.
That's a good point. And I think from my takeaway from that game was Lombardi might actually be an upgrade over Lewerke. Legitimate, not because Purdue didn't have film on Lombardi or whatnot. I just thought Lombardi looked more like the consistent player. I mean, Lewerke has not had a great season by any stretch of the imagination. So, you know, maybe I docked Purdue a little bit too much there. And on the other side, you're talking injuries. You know, Nathan Stanley, the quarterback for Iowa, was dealing with a thumb injury. So how much are you willing to trust them? You know, I was willing to go pretty strong on Iowa, but again, when you don't understand, like, why they're catching a full three, when you don't quite fully grasp why the number is a certain way, sometimes it's better to lay off a little bit, and that's going to be the case for me. Iowa back-to-back road, I don't think it's the best of situations here.
All right, let's go to a big game here in the SEC East game, 329-330. Georgia takes on Kentucky. This one, 10. It's down to – it opened 10, I should say. It's anywhere from 8 to 9.5 out there in the marketplace now, depending on where you look. Again, we're kind of in that dead zone between 7 and 10, so books willing to move around a little bit based on the needs at their particular shop. But I guess for the purposes of this breakdown here, we'll say the consensus line is about Georgia -9.
Yeah, and I lean with Georgia here. My number's like 9.5, 10 on the Bulldogs. Looking at it, obviously it's one of the bigger home games in, you know, Kentucky football history. Winner goes to Atlanta for the SEC championship game. It's tough laying a big number here with Georgia. You know, a relatively sizable number. You got a lower total in the mid-40s. Kentucky's got the number one scoring defense in the country. And I get it, Kentucky's going to be max motivated, but I just think, generally speaking, maybe the situation might be too big for him in this one. With everything going on, I trust Georgia more. And, you know, let's face it, Kentucky, you know, has been, I would say a fortunate team. You know, even last week scoring on the final play of the game against Missouri, even though I thought they were clearly the better team in the second half, scoring a touchdown last play of the game where it's either win or loss, obviously Kentucky fortunate in that regard there. You know, Georgia's clearly not as good as what they were a year ago, but I do trust them in the spot more because they've just played in these spots more the last couple of years. I'll take Georgia minus the 9.
Yeah, I mean, this is one where I told myself to play Georgia. My number is 10.5, but, you know, I'm on record on this show as saying I'm not a big believer in Kentucky, and this is the week that they can absolutely prove me wrong because I feel like they just really haven't played that great of a schedule up to this point. And also, when you look at the quarterbacks that they've played, and this is a very good stat from at CFB Film Room on Twitter, looking at the SEC quarterbacks trying to throw 20-plus yards downfield, they are 4-for-31 trying to throw the ball vertical here against this Kentucky defense. But Jake Bentley, 1-for-7. Nick Fitzgerald, 1-for-6. Felipe Franks was 0-for-6. Kyle Shermer, 2-for-4. Kellen Mond, 0-for-4. Drew Locke, 0-for-4. None of those guys are really great quarterbacks. I don't think Fitzgerald is a very good passer. Bentley threw some arm punts in that game. I actually was at that game. Felipe Franks, not really a great passer either. This week, you know, you run into a guy in Jake Fromm who takes good care of the football, makes really sound decisions. This is the litmus test for Kentucky. And if they win this game and go to Atlanta, absolutely love it for them. Congratulations to that fan base and to that program. But this is the game that I've had circled for Kentucky all year long. I've got Georgia. I took him at 9.5, thinking it was going to go back up. So I've got a little bit of a bad number here. But, you know, hey, props to Kentucky for what they've done so far, but they got to prove it to me this week.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, but I think what will happen is if they do, you know, finally beat a lot of people's expectations in this week and beat Georgia, oh, brother, I'm not afraid to go against them next week at Tennessee, a much-improved Tennessee team, especially Kentucky laying points for the first time ever in Knoxville. That'll be one that I circle if Kentucky, you know, pulls off one of the biggest wins. Because let's face it, what does that game mean? They already punched their ticket to Atlanta. So, you know, part of me, obviously, you know, even though I'm leaning with Georgia and I've gone on a lot of shows this week and say Georgia, and I prefer to win anytime I say something like that and go on radio, but you know, part of the back of me thinks, hey, man, if Kentucky can win this game, I can have a much bigger bet against them next week when they play Tennessee.
I mean, it's win or lose, it's kind of a fade spot, right? Because maybe Stoops gets them back up for that game. But, I mean, you know, hey, you've got a chance to represent the SEC East here for, what, the first time ever in Kentucky football history? So, you know, if you don't get that one, what does next week mean? You know, I guess it's a rivalry game. So there is that, but I don't know. I think win or lose, you probably have a lot of compelling reasons to go against Kentucky next week. The question is, how much is that baked into the line?
That's a great call. It won't be as baked into the line if they lose and get crushed. Because I think this game's kind of high variance. I could see Kentucky winning the game outright, or I could see Georgia winning by 4 touchdowns. I mean, I should mention that. I think this is one game where I do think there's some variance here. And obviously, if they get beat by 4 touchdowns, that's not going to create a lot of line value fading them next week in Knoxville.
Yeah, and again, I mean, this is one where I've had this game circled, but there, you know, I'm not going to play it for the Golden Nugget, for example, which I know you're in, and kudos to you. You've rattled off several good weeks in a row to move up the standings board there in that thing. You know, I think Georgia is the right side here, but I would never play them in a contest context because of what you said. You know, it is a higher variance game, and again, maybe this Kentucky defense is just really good, but, you know, we'll find out because this is clearly the best offense they've played all year.
Yep, no question about it.
All right, let's go to game 333, 334 here in Nebraska. Takes on Ohio State. Ohio State off the bye. Not a whole lot of great reports about Urban Meyer circulating around on Twitter and his health problems yesterday. don't think that that has anything to do with the line movement here, but we are down from 21 to 17 and a half. And, you know, at this time of the year in week 10, when you've got two teams from the Big Ten, pretty rare, I would say, to see a 3.5 point line move.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Nebraska's been taking money, you know, I would say a majority of the time the last month or so. I mean, it started in the Wisconsin game where that line moved 3 points in Nebraska's favor. I mean, at least the money was on Nebraska. Money was on Nebraska against Northwestern. You know, the Minnesota game didn't move too much, but yet we see it again here. So I would say the professionals, you know, even though Nebraska wasn't doing great as far as win-loss goes, straight up, the pros have been on Nebraska just about as more as any team I've seen in the Power Five in the last month. Not stunned by the line move, but at this point, I would lean with the Buckeyes. Yeah, obviously, I'm concerned with Urban Meyer, but one thing he has proven is with extra time to prep, season openers, bowl games off a regular season bye. In his career, he's 37-13 against the spread, not straight up, against the spread, 74% in his career with extra time to prep. You know, last year we saw Ohio State get crushed by Iowa. What they do the next week, crushed Michigan State, play their by far their best game of the season. You know, I'm not sure they're going to win 48-3 here, but I would take them at the current number, minus 17.5. My number is closer to where it opened up at, right around Ohio State 21.
Yeah, I mean, that's my number is actually in the 24 range, but that's also because maybe I didn't adjust Ohio State down enough. Because, again, keep in mind, when you've got teams that are just bludgeoning opponents, like Ohio State was doing earlier this season, you do wind up being a little bit inflated on those teams, and maybe Clemson, one of them now, with what they've been doing here the last few weeks as well. But that's the thing for Ohio State is, you know, again, off of a bye, and that loss to Purdue, while it's not great, if they run the table, they're still in the college football playoff anyway, because they're going to have that win over Michigan. They'll have the win over Penn State, who, you know, at the time was up there in the upper echelon of teams. So they'll get there. But you do kind of wonder if maybe they'd like to put some style points on this thing in games where they can. I don't know if they can this week. I don't know if they're equipped to do that with their defense this year. But you got to think that's in the back of Urban Meyer's mind a little bit, in the sense that, hey, if we're up, you know, two or three scores in the fourth quarter, we're going to keep pushing it because we have to.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Everything's still out in front of Ohio State. They can still accomplish all their goals. But, I mean, I do wonder. I mean, it's only been, a bye week. But, I mean, could they fix the run game in that bye week? Because, I mean, let's face it. I mean, on offense, they couldn't run the football, not against Michigan. We're talking against Minnesota and Purdue couldn't run the football. And then on the flip side, I mean, I don't care if they're playing Penn State or Oregon State. The big play defense has just been atrocious for the Buckeyes this year. I'm really anxious to see if they can fix any one of those two major issues off the bye week. This is one where I'm not going to be too heavily involved in, but I'll have the TV set on it because I'm either going to see a total sell on Ohio State the rest of the year or I'm going to see some buy signals.
Let's go to game 337-338 here as we go back to the SEC East, Missouri and Florida. What a spot for both of these teams. Florida loses the outdoor cocktail party against Georgia. Missouri, I don't know how that happened against Kentucky last week, but they found a way to let that Kentucky offense, and Terry Wilson, by the way, march down the field on them and win that game. Now they're in Gainesville as a 6-point dog.
Yeah, I like Florida here. First, I think you're catching some line value off of not one but two misleading finals last week. Now, I get it. Florida got banged up pretty good against Georgia, lost by 19. But in that game, not only was Georgia plus 3 in turnovers, but they also scored all 4 of their touchdowns on third down. So let's talk about that. And a couple of them were third and long. So at best, you had coin flip plays there, and all 4 of them came up Georgia. When you could have, I mean, and realistically, all 4 of those plays being 4-point plays. Otherwise, they're kicking field goals and not scoring touchdowns. So I thought that was a little bit misleading, and Florida was leading that game in the third quarter. I get it. Missouri fans ticked about the pass interference penalty. Kentucky gets one more chance. They win. The reality is Kentucky controlled that second half. I mean, Missouri didn't have a single first down in the second half, a single first down on offense. I'm also fading Drew Locke. 165 passing yards last week. Whenever he plays somebody worth a damn, he's not worth a damn. 0-9 now in his career against top 25 teams. Last I checked, Florida's still in the top 25. Give me the Gators here.
And I don't know if you have it handy, but since the numbers didn't change last week because Drew Lock, no touchdowns and no interceptions, you gave out this stat last week regarding Drew Lock against, you know, good teams and then against bad teams. So I don't know if you have that handy. You probably had it in last week's newsletter, but if you do, I'd love to hear that stat again.
Yeah, against, you know, FCS teams, because Missouri plays a lot of them, against group of five teams, against bad power five teams that don't go to a bowl game, 64 touchdowns in his career, 9 interceptions. So against bad teams, 64-9 ratio. Against good teams, and my only qualifier for a good team, they go to a bowl game, they're in the power five. So power five bowl teams, Drew Lock in his career, 21 touchdowns, 28 interceptions. 21-28 ratio against good teams, 21-28 ratio against good teams, 64-9 ratio against bad teams. I just don't trust Drew Lock. That was one of my main things coming in the season. It's played out yet again. Against bad teams, they look like all-world beaters. Against good ones, they're not.
Well, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Brad, but Florida's got a pretty good defense too, don't they?
Yeah, they can get pressure on the quarterback. And, you know, I get it. Todd Grantham's kind of feast or famine, the feast or famine there as far as the defense coordinator for Florida. But, yeah, I would say this is one of the better defenses Missouri's going to play this year. So I just trust Florida to go in and get the W. And Florida should have a little bit of revenge. I get a new coaching staff and whatnot, but Missouri absolutely embarrassed Florida last year. I got to think, at least from a player aspect, they'd want to get even with the Tigers.
And also, too, here, I think having a guy like Dan Mullen helps, because I think last year with somebody like Jim McElwain, who didn't really have a whole lot of control over this program, I would not take Florida if McElwain was still the guy here. But with Dan Mullen, a proven head coach, a guy that, I mean, look, when you coach at Mississippi State, you have a lot of tough setbacks because you're there in the SEC West. So you develop that skill set for helping players overcome those bad losses. So I think Florida's in a really good spot here with Dan Mullen in this game as well. I'm on Florida. I already bet them, and I'm going to have them as a Golden Nugget play here this week as well. How about we drop down one spot on the board here, game 339-340, Duke and Miami, Florida. I got to say, Brad, this number going up from 7 to 9.5, this is one of the few line moves of the week that I don't agree with.
I got it at 8.5. So, I mean, it just passed through my number. I'm a little surprised by it because where's the buy sign for Miami? Malik Rozier, terrible again last week, and then 19 out of 36, 150 yards, couple of picks. Miami can't figure out the quarterback spot. And, man, I'll tell you, you go back to, you know, after Miami started the season last year 10-0, last 11 games for Miami, 5-6 straight up, 3-8 against the spread. This is an average team at best, Miami, and really got fortunate at the start of this year playing a relatively weak schedule outside the LSU non-conference game. Duke last week, I get it off defensively atrocious, allowing nearly 500 yards rushing to Pittsburgh, but they were actually up 10 in that game. You know, if you weren't following, Pitt got a touchdown, or actually a field goal with about 2 minutes left, then got a touchdown with 5 seconds left, and then Duke had a safety on the final play. So, you know, Pittsburgh got a total of 12 points in the final 2 minutes of that one to make that a little bit misleading. Yeah, at the current number, I lean with Duke here.
And, I mean, again, this is kind of that quintessential David Cutcliffe spot where his team didn't play well last week. He's playing a superior opponent, at least from a talent standpoint and an athleticism standpoint, in the Hurricanes. These are the games that David Cutcliffe, not only is he competitive in, he finds a way to win these games too. So the fact that this line is moving up does kind of scare me a little bit. But, man, this is that quintessential Cutcliffe spot. And as you mentioned, against the Miami team, it's really shown you no reason to bet on them. So it does scare me that this line's going up. But, I mean, I got a Duke ticket already, and I'm pretty confident.
Yeah, and I think you should be because, you know, I would much rather trust David Cutcliffe here over Mark Richt. And I like Mark Richt, but now you're starting to see signs on why Georgia moved on from Mark Richt and went ahead and went with Kirby Smart, despite all Mark Richt's relatively solid success there in Athens for 15 years.
All right, let's go down to Austin for game 351, 352. West Virginia back out on the road to take on Texas. Texas was 3 earlier in the week. This line opened 2.5. Now we're down to 2, pretty much market-wide here. Interesting spot. I mean, West Virginia is a team that's taken a lot of professional money here throughout the year, at least in weeks 1 through 5. That's kind of cooled off a little bit here. They went out on the road to Iowa State, did not do anything offensively. The Cyclones were fantastic in that game. Now they've got another tough road game here. But as we know, Tom Herman prefers to be in that dog roll. So what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, look, Texas, you know, Tom Herman's terrible as a favorite, 4-15 against the number, great as a dog. I don't know if this particular week matters too much because the line's so close to pick. But I just thought Texas came out slow last week. Maybe a lot of people are scratching their heads why, because they're coming off a bye. But I just thought it came out of the quarterback, Ellinger. Rusty in the first half, coming off injuries, only 5 out of 15. Texas down 31-14. Give him credit for at least battling back in that one, almost won the game, came all the way back against Oklahoma State. I'm not going to have a bet here, even though I got Texas right around. I got this line at about 3. I just don't trust either team at this point. And obviously, loser is going to be out of the Big 12 race. This is one that I'm just going to watch popcorn material here for me and see if I can get a strong take moving forward on either one of these programs.
All right, let's go to game 355, 356, Notre Dame and Northwestern. This one's got some meaning for you and got some meaning certainly for the Northwestern side as well here. We'll see if Notre Dame can hold up its end of the bargain up from 7 to 9.5 in Evanston.
Yeah, a big number there. I like Northwestern and like them a lot here. I'll just give you 3 factors, and they're all trends, and they all go against Notre Dame. Northwestern games, last 9 of them. If you just bet the dog in the Northwestern game, you're 9-0. So when Northwestern's favored, fade them. When Northwestern's a dog, bet them. And obviously Northwestern a dog here. 9-0 the dog, last 9 Northwestern games. Notre Dame in November under Brian Kelly, terrible. They fade down the stretch. A couple reasons. Notre Dame becomes very, I would say, pricey. You're paying a premium already on Notre Dame because of the brand. But when they're good, and they've at least been good heading into November in 3 of the last 4 years. I mean, they've entered November in the top 5. This will make it 4 out of 5 years. People like betting on Notre Dame. Reality is you're going to lose in November on Notre Dame, 3-14 against the spread in the month of November in the last 4 years. And then finally, because I follow the program pretty good, Notre Dame is not good off of Navy. And some of it is, you know, maybe the uniqueness of the option offense throws you off kilter for at least another week. Or Navy, I don't think, gets enough credit for being physical. I mean, you got to fight and scratch and claw every single play for 60 minutes. A lot of times Notre Dame gets dinged up, and that's the case again here. One of their best players, Drew Tranquil's got an ankle injury at linebacker. For the last 14 years, Notre Dame's 3-11 against the number after playing Navy. All that, to me, adds up to Northwestern plus the points. You can even find that I'm seeing right now at a very, I would say, public square shop here in Vegas, Stations. I can find a 10. After the show, I'm going to go down there and put even more money on Northwestern plus the points.
All right. Brad didn't leave a whole lot of doubt with his thoughts there on that game. So we'll jump down to the Commander-in-Chief's Trophy game between Air Force and Army, game 361, 362 here in this one. And, of course, these Service Academy games always mean a lot for both sides and certainly mean a lot in terms of that trophy as well. And in fact, that trophy can be won this weekend.
Yeah, I'm going to take Army here. Even though my number says, you know, the 7's about right, I just think, you know, Army, especially when they got their quarterback Hopkins back from injury, I mean, they're pretty tough to beat. I mean, I think Army is a really good team. And kudos to Jeff Monken. I mean, he's got that program rolling. They had a pass attack, actually, last week. It threw for 126 yards. They're 7 out of 8. Hopkins, also the quarterback, ran for over 100 yards. Army on fourth down this year. How about this? 26 out of 29 on fourth down, 90%. So it's tough to get Army off the field. They're at home. They shut down Air Force. Army's got a legit defense. I mean, it's stunning, but Army now, not Navy, not Air Force, is the top program among the service academies. I like the Black Knights here.
Air Force did win 35-7 over Navy earlier on this year. So if they win, the Commander-in-Chief's trophy is theirs. If they don't, it comes down to that big game there in Week 15 with Army taking on Navy. And, of course, a game that is much TV there on December 8th. We'll move on to the next game on the card here that I want to talk about. We'll do a little bit of Conference USA action here. How about game 375-376? Marshall takes on Southern Miss. Marshall, 3-point favorites down in Hattiesburg.
Yeah, this one I don't think's a lot of value. I got Marshall right around 4, but I'll be watching because I got a season win total taking a Marshall over. And I can't afford them to lose this game. I need them to win this one. If they win this one, I'm going to feel really comfortable cashing it. They're off a bye, Marshall. They get their quarterback Green back, although they haven't really missed him too much outside the Middle Tennessee game. Southern Miss, you know, Jack Abraham, their quarterback, threw 3 picks last week, including a decisive 79-yard pick 6. You know, slightly on Marshall, I just like the spot there for them. And then the more trustworthy team, I think Southern Miss, generally speaking, is a little overrated.
Are you hedging that win total, or are you not going to bother with it?
I'm going to wait till after this week. I'm not going to hedge right now just because there's too many more games out there to be had. And it's not like Marshall's going to be a decisive underdog in any of their remaining games. It would just worry me, the FIU game in the finale, which I didn't anticipate FIU to be as good as what they were. So if Marshall wins this game, I'm going to win the bet. So it just comes down to that. It might come down to me hedging in the finale.
All right, let's go to game 379-380 here. Utah on the road at Arizona State. Interesting spot here for the Utes. We talked about Utah and UCLA last week. Said maybe it kind of set up as the type of game that Utah could slip up in, and that was not the case at all. So now they're back out on the road again, down in Tempe. 7 to 7.5 point favorites here. A lot of the sevens with a little bit of extra juice in the marketplace. What do you think about this one for Kyle Whittingham's bunch?
Yeah, I really like Arizona State, especially to get that 7.5. I mean, no team has beaten them by more than 7 this year. I get it. Utah's looked impressive, particularly in offense. They got it going on there. Last week, it wasn't the quarterback Huntley. It was actually the running back Moss who had the big game with 200-plus rushing yards. You know, Arizona State's been pretty consistent almost all their games this year. Come down to the wire. I think they got a couple of really good talents. Benjamin at running back is a talent, and I think wide receiver Harry is going to be a top 15 pick in the draft. He had the big long punt return against SC last week. There's too many points to lay and not a great spot for Utah. I get it, championship and trying to make their first Pac-12 championship appearance. I just think it's too many points to lay. Yeah, give me the Sun Devils.
I didn't even realize that about Utah here and some of the goals that are attainable for them. The one thing that's interesting about this spot, I think, is you've got Kyle Whittingham, who, if you're going to put together a list of the top 10 coaches in college football, I would say that he should most definitely be on it, going up against Herm Edwards. And we don't really know too much of what to expect from Herm Edwards here in some of these bigger games, especially with a coaching disadvantage. So that's something I think this is a game that, you know, obviously we know Utah is very good. I think that this game says a lot about Herm Edwards and his ability to prep his team and also go up against one of the better coaches in college football. That's what I'm kind of curious to figure out here this week.
Yeah, that's a good point there. Because I agree with you. Although I'll say Herm's relatively surprised me this year. And maybe I shouldn't give him all the credit, but he made the hire. I really like what I've seen from Arizona State defensively this year. And he took, you know, Rocky Long's right-hand man from San Diego State. Defensively, this is the best Arizona State's look well before the Todd Graham era, probably in at least a decade plus for the Sun Devils. So I'll at least give Herm credit for surrounding himself with a really good defensive coordinator.
All right, let's stay in the Pac-12 here. Let's go to game 385-386, Stanford, Washington. Huskies laying 10 out there, and with that offense, that's a big task.
Yeah, I'll take Stanford. I mean, clearly two of the most disappointing teams in college football this year, these two. I mean, what's the play for at this point? I mean, we give Chris Peterson credit, and I don't like Jake Browning, and I think he's overrated, and I think the program for Washington will have more upside after he's gone, but we got to get on Peterson for yanking him. I mean, the backup comes in, throws a pick six. If he don't throw the pick six, they don't lose to Cal last week. You know, Stanford blew a 2-touchdown lead against Washington State. I had Stanford last week. I can't trust the motivation of either team, but, man, laying a full 10 against Stanford. I'll take the Cardinal here plus the points.
Well, it's kind of funny because this is something I think we actually talked about last week, you and I, about, you know, maybe does Washington need to make a change? Do they need to plan for the future by taking Jake Browning out of the equation? And then he does it in the middle of the game, and you get that pick six, and you kind of go, well, okay, maybe Browning is the best option for this team now. So, man, I don't know. Was it a panic move by Peterson? I mean, is that what we'd call it?
Yeah, I mean, kind of. I mean, I get it. They were struggling. They weren't moving the football. But, I mean, it's late in the third quarter. You're still up in the game. I mean, I'd rather still have my guy there. I would trust Browning in that spot not to throw it. Washington would be fine. The future is not this quarterback he threw in there. The future is Jacob Eason, the transfer from Georgia, who had to sit out this year. That's why I don't get it. I mean, the future is there for Washington. He just can't play this year. So that's why I didn't get that move. I'm glad because I got a Cal over season win total ticket, and Cal's been disappointing up until that point. That pretty much confirmed that I'm going to win that ticket. So I'm happy Chris Peterson do it. Maybe he's back on the Christmas list at this point. From a tactical aspect, I thought it was one of the worst moves of last week.
All right, let's go to game 389-390 here. Texas A&M on the road at Jordan-Hare to take on Auburn. A&M was a six-point dog. This one's come down to four. And, in fact, there's a 3.5 now at Pinnacle. So A&M very clearly the sharp side this week.
Yeah, and I have multiple newsletters, and one I send out on Sunday. It's the first one on the market. And we took A&M plus six. I thought it was a bad opening number. And A&M last week, I get it. They lost by a couple touchdowns to Mississippi State. But if you're following that game, pretty much came down to like three or four plays, and they all came up Mississippi State. I mean, Mississippi State scored a couple of long touchdowns on third and long, and then late in the game got an 84-yard pass on third and 20 that set them up for another touchdown. A&M throws an interception in the end zone late when they were driving. So all those went in Mississippi State's favor. So I didn't downgrade Texas A&M that much. On the flip side, the spot's pretty good for Auburn. They're catching A&M back-to-back road. Auburn's off a bye, but I think Gus Malzahn, the head coach for Auburn, one of the most overrated coaches in the country. I mean, if you blindly bet on Auburn since early in the 2014 season, you're 20-39-2. 20-39-2. Basically, what, 34% against the spread? Visitors 6-0 straight up and against the spread in the series. Give me the Aggies, but I'd have much preferred the six compared to the current line.
Yeah, I took a piece of the Aggies. The BetOnline opener was 6.5. I was fortunate enough to grab that one, and you know this one just keeps going down. So I feel like I'm in a pretty advantageous spot here with this game. But you mentioned Mississippi State, so let's talk about them for a second here. They host Louisiana Tech, and this is one of the biggest line moves of the week. Up from 19.5 to as high as 24 out there. I got to say, man, like I get it, but I also don't get it. Like I get it that Mississippi State is a very good team and Louisiana Tech got blown away in this game last year. But, man, this number is getting real high.
Yeah, I mean, I love Louisiana Tech. It's probably my favorite play of the week. I'm a little concerned the line's against me here and it's gone all the way up to 24, but I don't understand it whatsoever. Let's just talk line value. Just a few weeks ago, Louisiana Tech played on the LSU, played on the SEC road, played LSU, in my opinion, a superior team to Mississippi State. At least the linemakers thought so, because LSU was about a 6.5-point favorite at home against Mississippi State just 2 weeks ago. And in that game, Louisiana Tech at LSU, they're catching 19.5, 20 points. What happened? It's not like Louisiana Tech had a bad performance. They outgained LSU and covered the numbers, so it's not like anyone was downgrading Louisiana Tech after that one. I just got done saying Mississippi State had kind of a misleading win against A&M last week. So to me, that's value on La Tech in that regard. Well, let's talk about the spot. Mississippi State's off LSU. They're off Texas A&M. And, oh, yeah, by the way, Alabama's on deck for Mississippi State. Finally, I mean, Skip Holtz, head coach, Louisiana Tech. He's in his preferred role, road underdog, 21-7 against the number. And you mentioned last year that, you know, Mississippi State crushed them. I get it. It was 57-21, but that was a very fluky game. Dealt with a lot of turnovers there. And also the one of the more memorable plays in college football where Louisiana Tech lost 87 yards on one play because of a bunch of fumbles and no one can pick up the football. So a lot of misleading value on Louisiana Tech, and I'll take them plus 23.5 and maybe even find a 24 out there. I love the Bulldogs from Louisiana.
Yeah, I love La Tech in this spot, too. And keep in mind, too, last year, this game in Ruston, the spread was 9.5. Mississippi State was only a 9.5 point favorite there. Flip home field, we're like about 16-ish for this game. If you give Mississippi State maybe 3.5 or 4, something like that, for a night game here. But, again, I mean, that's a touchdown overlay on the number, too. So, and I think La Tech is better than last year, and I think Mississippi State is down from last year. So I don't get this
great
line
point
at all whatsoever.
I didn't even think of that.
You and I are both on the same side here for this one, and hopefully this one does come through for us. All right, let's talk a couple of blue bloods here, 405, 406, Penn State, Michigan. Michigan 10.5 point favorite here. Does Penn State have anything left in the tank?
That's a great point. I don't think so. This is a bad spot for Penn State. Michigan's fresh off a bye. They have revenge from last year. Penn State put it on them pretty good. Penn State's played 4 straight games decided by 6 points or less. First time that's happened for Penn State since 1894. Not 1994, 1894. I mean, McSorley's walking around, limping around. Kudos for them. They got the win over Iowa last week. But I'm not in the business of laying, you know, double digits here. But I to me, it's Michigan or nothing for me. And I won't have a ticket, but I definitely will not be lining up to take Penn State plus a 10.5 here.
All right, cut and dry. So we'll move on to a game here in Conference USA, 417-418, Florida Atlantic. You want to talk about disappointing teams. The Owls certainly fit the mold there. They take on FIU and Butch Davis. FIU, a field goal favorite at home here.
Yeah, I'm not going to have one. My numbers are closer to pick. FIU right around 1. I was looking at it because I had my lines at the start of the season, and I got to think FIU was right around a 2-touchdown road favorite in the preseason here. Florida Atlantic, you looking at it here, they don't win this game. I don't think they're going to a bowl game this year, which is incredible. You want to know why Lane Kiffin won't get another big-time job? Exhibit A this season for Florida Atlantic. Oh, they're 1-7 against the number. Meanwhile, the guy that should be getting the headlines in South Florida, Butch Davis. I mean, they've already passed their season win total. I thought he did a great job last year. This job, this season, coaching job, might be even better. No play for me just because my power ratings are still strong on Florida Atlantic. But I think FIU 3, they're just the more trustworthy team here.
All right, one more game I want to hit on here. We'll save the best for last. 419-420, Alabama, LSU, night game, Death Valley, and the Crimson Tide are favored by 14.5. Does LSU slow down this juggernaut?
I'm going to bet LSU. I'll take the 14.5. Maybe it's my sucker bet of the week, but I get it. I mean, Alabama's clear-cut the best team in the country. I get it. They're, at least Vegas and the market's saying they're historically great because they're laying historically big numbers each and every week. I mean, in this case, this week, no top four team's ever been a bigger home underdog than this one here. Any team ranked in the top four at any point in the season has never been catching more than 10.5 points in college football history. The other one was the kick six game. Auburn was a 10.5 point dog, beat Alabama in that famous game from 5 years ago. Devin White being out the first half kind of hurts it for LSU for me, but I mean, no, in their last 67 home games, LSU, they've only lost one of them by more than 10 points. 67 home games, only one time lose by more than 10. Who in the hell has Alabama played too? I mean, 2 top 50 teams in my power ratings. LSU's played 5 teams in my top 30. So I just trust LSU just a little bit more. Give me the Tigers plus 14.5.
Brad Powers, professional handicapper over at bradpowerssports.com. What's going on over at the website right now, man?
Yeah, I talk about it each and every week. It's the newsletter. I mean, as far as best bets, the last 2 months, 44-17. That's not straight up. That's against the spread. Having a historically, you talked to Alabama being historically great. We're having a historic season here as far as best bets go, but don't buy them for the best bets. Buy it for the information. I mean, you get a game write-up on every single college game write-up on every single NFL game, plus those best bets, plus my power ratings, plus my lines on every game. You name it, you get that and a whole heck of a lot more. If you go to the website, you can get the newsletter for the rest of the season. for $59. Not this week, not the next month, not just college, not just NFL, all of it through the Super Bowl, $59, bradpowersports.com.
And, of course, as always, you can follow Brad on Twitter, at Brad Powers and the number 7. Brad, appreciate your time, as always, sir. Thank you so much for joining me. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right, take care, my friend.
Great stuff there with professional handicapper Brad Powers from bradpowersports.com. And, again, at Brad Powers and the number 7 on Twitter. One more guest here for this Thursday in the book radio. That is professional handicapper Tony George from Doc Sports. Tony, how's it going today, man?
Going good, man. It's been busy, you know. Got college basketball around the corner next week, so we did a lot of work there. NBA now, and of course, had a great baseball season. Adam had almost 145 units in a great great year. So, now it's time to focus on what's at hand, and real busy with a lot of that.
Well, kudos to you for the baseball season. I mean, I'm a big-time baseball guy. I do daily write-ups over at bangthebook.com, and they're all 3,000 or so words long. But that MLB season is an absolute grind. You know, to persevere through all of that and have such a strong season, I definitely want to give you props for that here on today's show. So in terms of the college basketball stuff, you know, we touched on it a little bit last week, kind of talking about what you're looking at, what you're looking for, things of that sort. Now that we're a week further, or a week closer, I guess I should say, to the season, how far along do you feel you are right now, Tony?
About 70%. You know, I split it up this year. I've got a big following, so I like to concentrate on, you know, four or five conferences. Mo Valley, obviously we talked about that a lot last year. Give you guys a lot of your listeners, a lot of free winners out of Mo Valley last year. Kind of a home road dichotomy conference every year, and it never seems to change, even though Wichita State, you know, and Creighton have left. It's still a fun conference, you know, to handicap, and depending, you know, you're just looking for tendencies, you know, in conferences, and that's a strong tendency there in the Mo Valley. Even the bad teams can knock off the good teams, you know, when they're playing at home. So good concentrate on the Mo Valley Big 12, and then I brought on two staff cappers this year. One of them specializes in the MAC, and all he does, basically about 90% of his stuff that he sends me is totals plays, and so all he does is handicap the MAC conference. Another one in the Ohio Valley, and I like having guys that key in on that, you know, takes a little burden off of me, allows them to specialize just, you know, with a handful of teams, each one of them, and they throw me out their best bet, you know, every other day or whatever, and so that takes a little load off of me. These are guys that sent me plays for, you know, 2 or 3 years before I finally brought them on because their win percentage was solid. And so they complement what I'm doing here. Currently been taking a look at, you know, last year's season-ending power ratings and then weighing those teams with who they lost, what their point production was, what they're bringing in, any coaching changes, and then adjusting power ratings, and that's a team-by-team basis, and that takes hours and hours of time, you know, going all the way back to Rivals to look up what the kid averaged in high school, to bring it in, and all this, that, the other, and what they got on their bench, you know, how their bench depth was. Trying to get a handle on power ratings, you know, with replacing players, so you look at bench scoring for the previous year, and, you know, which one of those players were contributors, you know, and what their point per, you know, game was based on, you know, their minutes and this, that, and the other. So it's a hair-pulling experience, and it's why I go low volume out of the gate. You know, I know everybody's all fired up about the Kansas and the Michigan State and the Duke and the Kentucky, you know, thing they're going to launch next Tuesday or whatever it is. You know, I saw some early lines. Kansas was laying 5 and this, that, and the other. You know, those big TV marquee games like that to open up the season, you kind of want to avoid unless you can find a real angle, mainly on the totals there. But at the end of the day, I'm more concentrated still right now on getting some power ratings that I can work off of. And then, you know, taking a look because, you know, all these smaller conferences, Big 12 obviously is not a small conference. Big 10 is not a small conference. But trying to get a handle on those power ratings and how these weak sisters are going to play the sacrificial lambs, so to speak, to open up the season, trying to find those teams that, you know, are going to be catching 23 or 24, you know, at tip and seeing who can hang with who here. So it's like I said, it's a tedious and sometimes frustrating process getting ready for a college basketball season.
Well, and you inadvertently touched on something that I actually want to talk about here, and I didn't send this over to you in the notes, and I apologize for that. It's been a rough few days here for me, to say the least. But you know, you mentioned Kentucky and Duke playing each other, Michigan State and Kansas playing each other, and then you get some teams laying some very big numbers here. And that's something I want to touch on real quickly, is that, you know, for a lot of people, they're just going to see that college basketball is back, and they're just going to be excited to go out there and bet on it. So what they're going to do is bet on what feels comfortable. The teams that they know, the names that they know, the teams that are always, you know, at the top of the futures board or expected to go to the Elite Eight or the Sweet 16. It's a very dangerous thing to just assume that, you know, while those teams do have talent year in and year out, like a Duke, like a Kansas, it's very dangerous to assume that they're going to hit the ground running.
Yeah. One thing that I've always looked at, you know, that's helped me early on is sometimes the most comfortable thing that you're doing, the line is set for you to feel that way. And it doesn't always work out for you. You know, Villanova taking on Morgan State in their first game, you know, North Carolina, you know, on the road at Wofford, you know, to open up the season, North Carolina ranked seventh, you know, that's Wofford's Super Bowl right there. You know, all these, you know, Purdue playing Fairfield. I'm not going to go down the schedule here. The one thing you want to look at is some of these bigger name teams, these top 25 ranked basketball teams. How many players are they replacing? Who's the returning letterman? In these early games, these coaches, Mike Krzyzewski, Bill Self, you know, maybe a few of the more upper echelon teams have their top five established. Let's say the teams in the top seven or eight, you know, the Novas of the world. Most of these other teams like Purdue and other teams have lost players and they're trying to replace two or three players. Those coaches in these games are going to clear the bench and take a look at everybody in a game situation and get a feel and, you know, for you know, who's going to be able to do what. They also mix and match their starting lineup during the game to try and find the right chemistry with the returning starters and players they want to plug in and how things work, how the offense gels in certain sets with certain players in there. And they experiment a little bit here during these games, especially when they get out to a big lead. And that's when these big spreads come into play. Now you've got a coach, you know, I'm just making up a hypothetical for you. Let's say Purdue's playing Joe Blow, Tallahassee JUCO, you know, and they're laying 28, you know. Now, well, they're up 20 at halftime. They're up 16 at halftime. They get up 25 or 30 in the second half. There's like 8 or 9 minutes left. You'll notice them pulling starters and putting other players in and mixing and matching, trying to see who does what, and they'll give up some points. They don't care about covering the spread. They're caring. What they're doing is tuning up their team for conference action in the Big 12 or the Big 10 or what have you. And that's when you can find some opportunities when you look at the teams they're playing, you know, and say, well, shoot, you know, Wofford or Tallahassee JUCO, or they're playing, they got four returning starters back and they finished second in their conference last year. And they had 21 wins. You know, those are the teams that, you know, are going to continue to play hard while the other team's experimenting, so to speak, and you can find some opportunity. But you got to look at each one of those weak sisters and take a look at, you know, what's their backcourt scoring? You know, what's their offensive and deficiency ratings? And if they're decent and they're catching 20-plus points, you know, in a scenario like that, you can find opportunity. But it takes a lot of time to turn over those rocks and find those opportunities, Adam.
Yeah, it really does. And one other point I'll touch on that you mentioned briefly there, that Super Bowl type of game, and we kind of call it in football little brother versus big brother types of games. Take a look at a team like Southeastern Louisiana on opening night. They play LSU. LSU, top 25 team. They've got a lot of things figured out already, much bigger goals than mine. But for Southeastern Louisiana, eight guys from the state of Louisiana, two of them from Baton Rouge. You know, when you get that opportunity to take on, you know, the biggest of the brothers in your specific state, that is a Super Bowl type of game for those teams. Whereas, as you mentioned, the other teams, you know, kind of working through rotations, figuring out who plays well with who. You know, for Southeastern Louisiana, it's their one chance to play the team from Baton Rouge. And they've got a couple of guys on their roster from Baton Rouge that probably weren't recruited by LSU. So that is an angle that, you know, look, I mean, you're going to have LSU laying a big number in that game, but who has the motivation? Who has the focus? Who's going to use, you know, those key guys throughout the whole game? Probably Southeastern Louisiana. So, you know, again, just because a team has a number next to its name doesn't mean that you want to automatically go and play on them.
Yeah, and, you know, a perfect example of what you just said, if you want to do a flip-flop and convert that, Louisiana Tech taking on LSU in football. I took Louisiana Tech in that game. Louisiana Tech, you know, as you mentioned, they have a lot of players on their roster that were passed over. Their lifelong dream was to play for LSU. Growing up in-state, wanting to play, you know, as they all want to go play Alabama this Saturday night, you know, on national television. They didn't get that chance. They get a chance to take a shot at the school that passed on them. Louisiana Tech covered the number in that game, and they outgained LSU in that football game, you know, because of that very reason that you just stated, and that's going to cover right over into basketball as well. Very well could.
Yeah, and again, I like being able to touch on some of these things here as opposed to specific games. I think one thing that we haven't done enough here recently on the show is we've been trying to cover as many games as possible and kind of break those down. But these betting angles are very, very important across really all sports. And we're going to touch on something a little bit different in the NBA here. And I think this is kind of an interesting concept to talk about, Tony, because you've been around in the handicapping business for a long time. So I'm curious to get your thoughts on this. When NBA teams are playing on ESPN or on TNT, or they get one of those national ABC games, you know, these guys are professionals. They're used to being in the spotlight. They've all got shoe deals and all that kind of thing. But do you feel like there's any betting impact when teams do wind up on those major networks?
Well, I think it impacts them. They're aware of it. I think they raise the level of their game a little bit. I did a handicapping seminar back in 2006 in Las Vegas for a company called Bodog back in the day. They used to do these conventions right up until the government, you know, kind of the Department of Justice kind of came in and shut down the sportsbook industry in 2006 on the Black Monday deal. But right before that happened, they had these huge conventions, and I was a keynote speaker about selling selections online to a group of industry people. And the main keynote speaker was Joe Montana. And so I'm in the back in this area, stepping out on the stage, and I was to go first, but I was back in this room with Joe Montana, and I'm sitting there and obviously a little starstruck. But the first thing I decided to do, I asked him about Monday Night Football. I said, you know, you're here talking, you're going to come up here and speak. There's some motivational speech he was going to do to this group. He knew it was a bunch of gamblers. But I said, when it comes to Monday Night Football, national TV, I said, do you approach those games differently than a regular Sunday game when you're on the road playing Cleveland? He said, absolutely. He said, Monday Night Football to us was like a playoff game. That's the type of, he said, the feeling that we had. We knew we were on national TV, you know, the only game in town. We wanted to show well on national television in front of a national audience. And I think that translates a little bit, and that's from a player's perspective. I'm one of the best players ever. But at the end of the day, I think it's a little bit, teams like playing on TNT. You'll find a lot of teams that have great success on TNT. You know, San Antonio Spurs were one of them, playing on Thursday nights. Back, you know, when they were good, they just, and, you know, they'd hang a number on them. You know, the home favorites, the Spurs, they're playing, you know, the Rockets or the Mavericks, or maybe they're playing the Oklahoma City Thunder. They always have one juicy game at least, you know, either early or late on that slate. And, you know, more times than not, they cover an inflated number. But a lot of times also it's a trap, because you'll have teams that are visiting. They also want to play well, you know, but home court on basically home court on a Thursday night to me is worth a solid 3 points for the home team, whether they're taking or laying. Most times they're laying. But occasionally you'll find, you know, Golden State on the road playing Portland or something, you know, a real juicy Western Conference game for the late game. And, you know, if you're catching a bunch of points, say you're catching 6 or 7 at home against the Warriors, you know, add another 3, you know. So, but, yeah, that they do raise the level a little bit there. And that's what I guess from a handicapping perspective, since you're talking about handicapping perspective and handicapping angles, one of the angles I use is, you know, whenever you have an 80-some game season, Adam, you have teams that are going to take a night off. You have, it's not like the NFL or college football where every single game counts, you know. I mean, it counts. And if, you know, Alabama, LSU, if that's a huge game for both those teams in terms of getting in the, staying in the Final Four to BC. Even if Alabama loses, they're still going to be in the top four. But, you know, the BCS playoffs here, so every game counts. Where you have games like baseball, there's 162 games a year. There's 82 games in the NBA. Every now and then you find them maybe not bringing their A game, where in games like this, you can count on them statistically to do what they've been doing. You don't have to worry that, oh, you know, Damian Lillard, you know, tonight he's, you know, he's on TNT, he's taking on the Pelicans who've been getting stomped. You know, they're just going to go through the motions. No, they're going to bring it. You know, you could count on that team and look at those statistics, especially mid-season where they've established kind of their consistency with their points allowed, points, you know, their rebounds, points scored. In big games like that, you can count on them statistically versus, you know, a Tuesday night game where Phoenix is playing Boston in Boston and they're catching 12 and they win outright. You know, you're sitting there scratching your head going, how the hell did they just beat them without Devin Booker? It's because Boston took the night off. Where when you have a national TV game like that, they kind of bring it a little stronger.
Yeah, that's one of those things, too. And, I mean, I kind of look at it in the context of tonight that I thought it was a pretty good time to talk about it because you've got Milwaukee against Boston on TNT. And, you know, Boston is a team that is always in the national spotlight. It's a big, major media market. They're the team expected to take over the throne from LeBron James going to the Western Conference. They're going to be in a lot of these situations. Milwaukee, not so much. But the Bucks are off to a phenomenal start here this year. They haven't even lost a game yet. So, you know, sometimes if you're kind of – it's almost that little brother versus big brother type of mentality, just in a different kind of way, where for Boston playing on TNT, maybe not as much. For Milwaukee, hey, let's go and show, you know, in front of this national TV audience that we can play right with the team expected to win in the East. And I also think it's an angle, too. If you've got a team like, you know, like Utah or Denver or something like that going to play in Boston – or, you know, play in New York City and they wind up being in, you know, one of these premier cable television spots on national TV, I think that West Coast team, because of that East Coast bias, wants to show out a little bit. I think this is a thing that, you know, maybe I'm just kind of reaching a little bit here, but when you look at the ego-driven nature of the NBA, you know, you look at guys like LeBron James. Every time LeBron went and played at MSG, he'd hang 40, no problem. He would have no issue whatsoever doing that, because he just stepped up in the spotlight of the big city. I think it is a thing here in the NBA, and it's certainly worth talking about.
Yeah, you know, you take a look at this, and I looked at this Milwaukee game. I got a big play in the NBA tonight, you know, in the late game with New Orleans and Portland. It's my biggest play of the season so far. And so I passed on this early game here, but, you know, Milwaukee surely wants to prove something here, and they have not had any success in Boston recently. Matter of fact, they're 2-8 against the spread the last 10 meetings there. They're 0-5 against the spread the last 5 times they played in Boston. And right now they're the only undefeated team in the NBA. I think is the noose getting tighter around their neck? Probably not. Their studs going to start tonight as well, which they have been without him. But, you know, this is the case tonight where they're scoring 121 points a game and allowing 103, which is why they're 7-0. Boston, conversely, plays good defense. We all know that. One of the best defensive teams in the league. extremely well coached, but their offense is only putting up 102 a game. So it's kind of a really good offense against a really good defense, and I think Milwaukee's going to have some motivation here. And they're catching 3.5. That'll be a real interesting game, but this is one where the Bucks can make a statement on national television, and you better believe they are going to be bringing it tonight. And honestly, I haven't seen a whole lot out of Boston yet in terms of anything that's going to make me feel comfortable with them laying a number against a team like this, you know, especially a team that's off a 124-109 win over Toronto, who is right there with Boston in terms of 1-2 in the East right now. So, you know, if you're looking to take an underdog, you know, on a Thursday night to make a statement that's going to bring it, it's going to be the Bucks tonight. It looks like the perfect storm for them to get it done.
Real quickly, I want to ask you about this. I know you kind of touched on this in passing a little bit, that you pretty much apply the full 3 to home court advantage there for the Thursday night types of games. What about as a general rule of thumb? I mean, what is home court advantage worth to you in the NBA?
Well, it's on an individual team-by-team basis, obviously. Usually a couple of points. There are some that are 3 or 4. I think Portland's probably a tough place to play. You know, it depends on home teams get more emphasis on east to west road swings. You know, teams, I guess for lack of a better term, I would apply a home court advantage of 3 or 4 points even to Sacramento if they're playing a team from the east that's on their 4th game in 6 days playing there just because of the road fatigue. You know, I faded Washington here the other day against the Clippers. They were on their 4th game in 6 days. On an opposite coast road swing, and you know the Wizards are sucking anyway, and the Clippers were laying like 4.5, 5 in that game. That looked, you know, they really shouldn't be laying 4.5, 5 to a capable team like Washington, who just started out just like dog crap in the cantaloupe patch this year. But you know, so I gave them like a 4-point home court advantage. Where maybe if they were playing Golden State, I may give them 1.5. You know, so it really varies on the situation and, you know, who they're playing in order to establish, you know, what I feel home court's going to be worth 3 or 4 in this game. And you're looking at this game with Boston tonight. I get Boston 3 points at home. They're tough at home. They play great defense at home. So, but the odds makers are doing that too, Adam. So you look at this game. So basically what you're saying is if you're laying 3.5 against the Bucks tonight, the only undefeated team in the league, they're basically giving them – their base odds makers are telling you this is basically a pick 'em ball game. But we're giving Boston the home court advantage on TV on Thursday night, so we're going to give them 3.5 points for home court here and let the chips fall where they may. So you've got to kind of read into that line a little bit every now and then.
All right, let's transition to the NFL for a couple of minutes here. I want to make sure we get some thoughts on these two games. Feels like we haven't talked too much NFL here on the show, but we will, of course, have the Super Contest segment on tomorrow's program. But, Tony, let's look real quickly at game 467-468 here. Chargers taking on Seattle. Chargers off the bye. Seattle off of a big road win in Detroit. Seattle opened a 1.5-point favorite, and we haven't seen a whole lot of movement yet on this game. Where do you think we do start to see some movement, on the Chargers or on the Seahawks?
Probably the Seahawks. Yeah, you know, the thing of it is, this is the absolute worst game on the board for me this week. It really is. You know, the Chargers, you know, they lost to Kansas City early in a game where Rivers threw it up for grabs and missed a bunch of wide open touchdown passes. And they are rolling along here. He's, you know, with Rivers finding his rhythm, you know, but he hasn't faced really an aggressive defense like Seattle, you know, I was impressed with Seattle. You know, Detroit had been really hot. They held them to 14 points on the road, you know, which was Detroit only scoring 14 points was their lowest output in the last 25 games they played, you know, and, but Seattle, to me, Adam, this year is like an enigma wrapped in a riddle. I cannot figure these guys out. Don't have a huge downfield threat, vertical game scoring. They have Russell Wilson as the entire offense. It completely goes off his shoulders. they can be somewhat one-dimensional at times. You know, Chargers have an adequate defense here. They are coming off a bye week. But, you're starting to see Seattle surge here. You know, and they always do. You know, they're doing a lot better job than they were at the beginning of the year on, you know, gang tackling on defense. And they kind of established a running game with Carson. He's had, over 100 yards in three of his last four games. And you're playing a San Diego defense allowing almost 5 yards per carry. And you're at home. And they're kind of in a groove. If I had a gun to my head in this one, I'd probably lean Seattle. You know, the number's about right. I can't look at the Chargers on the road like this, especially the way that they could give up the run. So, and if Seattle could establish a run and play a little smash mouth football against the Chargers, I think they could be successful.
I mean, I think you're right to call this one of the most difficult games of the weekend, because I really do think that it is. And I mean, it's interesting because we know Seattle to have one of the better home field advantages in the NFL. And this line is clearly telling us the Chargers are a favorite on a neutral. And
oh yeah,
I don't know how I feel about that. You know, I'm not sure. I think if these two teams played 10 times, they'd probably split 5-5. If they played 100 times, I think they'd probably split, 50-50 or maybe 51-49, something like that. I think these two teams are relatively close to each other. But the idea that the Chargers would be favored on a neutral is not lost on me at all.
Yeah, every week, even this many games into the season, I still have question marks about teams to this day in the NFL, even in college to a certain degree. You know, a lot of teams, they've established their identity. The old Dennis Green thing, they are what we thought they were. You know, that doesn't apply to either one of these teams to me. So every week I'll isolate a game and say there's no freaking way I'm getting near this game. No freaking way. You know, I don't have a feel for it one way or the other. But what interests me about that game is watching it and figuring out. We're going to find out if the Los Angeles Chargers are for real. Because anytime you play Seattle in Seattle, you're going to get a ball game for four quarters. There's no doubt about that. We know that's established. Besides Kansas City, I think Kansas City and Seattle, probably the two toughest home fields in the NFL. Maybe Denver, if they had a decent team. But Denver Mile High is always tough to go play in as well. But this is one of the tough. This is one of the top three toughest home fields to go on the road. And this really is. This is by far is probably one of the better defenses that the Chargers have seen. It's the toughest road game they've seen. They have had a bye week, and some teams are good out of byes and some teams aren't. But I think it'll be a very good ball game, and we're going to find out. Number one is if Seattle can beat a legitimate, contender, because the Chargers are going to contend with Kansas City for the AFC West. Seattle's going to be an also-ran to the, to the Rams in that division. They'll end up finishing second. So Seattle's looking to somehow get in the playoffs without winning their division, and they've got to win a game like this to get in there. So there's just a lot of things at stake in this game, and question marks. I surely would not buck Seattle. They're 39-11 straight up, and you basically got them in a pick'em scenario here. I don't know. I might disagree with you a little bit. I do not know if the Chargers would be favored on a neutral field. I think worst case scenario, it's a pick 'em, but I could be wrong. But I don't see Los Angeles being favored over Seattle anywhere. I thought this number would be 3, which is the point you're making. You're a little confused on this because it does reflect, as we've been talking, if it's a pick-up ball game and the home team's laying 3, like Boston is against, the Bucs tonight, then obviously they're giving them 3 points for home field, and they're saying it's a pick-up ball game. But they are saying that maybe the Chargers are a little bit better here, but you know, that's why we're going to sit back and watch this one and find out what's going to happen.
All right, let's touch on game 471-472 here. Sunday night football, Green Bay and New England. Green Bay was getting a big number against the Rams. Aaron Rodgers able to get within the number there in that one. Now he's getting 5.5, a fairly big number for this trip to Foxborough. What do you think about this game, Tony?
Well, the sharps are all over Green Bay. You know that. I mean, they opened this at 7, and it just got beat to death, you know, right out of the gate. Last week, you know, they did cover, although, you know, we all know the story about Gurley, you know, just basically laying down on the 2-yard line and blowing the cover, then tweeting out what spread and all this, that, and the other. But what concerns me about this game, you know, two things. If you want to back Green Bay, bear in mind, last time these two played, Rodgers did beat Brady. And so Brady's going to want to, you know, this is a big game for Tom Brady against a marquee quarterback in the NFL. But the problem is Green Bay's defense. The thing I can't get past is that San Francisco hung 30 on Green Bay in Lambeau on Monday night. I can't, with C.J. Beathard, I can't get past that, Adam. And I just think Tom Brady's got too much for him. I think with the Sharks, you know, both of these are very public teams to bet, too. So it's a really weird one to figure out from that perspective. Well, it's pros versus Joes in this one. No, it's not. You know, they're going to have equal amount of public interest on both sides of the ball here. Probably worst-case scenario, you might want to look at the total in this one. I think it's going to be a really high-scoring game. I think it's going to be entertaining. I think the Packer defense, you know, I like what Martinez has done at linebacker for him. You know, he's had, like, a bunch of tackles the last couple of games. You know, Green Bay's on a 12-5 overrun since mid-2015. So, you know, I think there's going to be a lot of scoring here. The safe play probably to play the over here for a small amount. And I think Green Bay, instead of just going all in on this game, I think if you were to take Green Bay in a teaser, you know, in this game, adding 6, you'd be getting about 11.5 points. You're through a crap load of key numbers, 6, 7, 10. You know, you might want to pool Green Bay here with another team during the day. Tease one that's round 7 down to 1 or something like that, and get yourself a value teaser where you're finding two teams in the NFL where you can get them through 3 key phone numbers. You know, you like to talk about handicapping techniques on this show as much as the side plays. That's an angle for you might want to use with this game.
Tony George, professional handicapper over at Doc Sports. What do you guys have going on over there right now, Tony?
Well, I'll tell you what, we've been on an absolute tear in top plays in college football this year. Overall, college football been disappointing this year. I always tell it like it is here. But 2 weeks ago, 7-unit play on Oklahoma, big 12 game of the year cash. And then last week, I had a huge play on my hidden gem, Florida International, all over Western Kentucky. And we have another 7-unit play this weekend, my big 10 game of the year. It's a 7-unit play. So we'd be more than happy to have everybody come over to DocSports.com and jump on that on a 5-play card on Saturday. And on Sunday, I got a solid 4-play card off a 3-1 Sunday last week. My only loss, including my only loss in the Super Contest, was San Francisco pissing down their leg with a 15-3 lead in the – or whatever it was against Arizona. But we're having a solid run here in the NFL as well. Go to DocSports.com or just and you can get it. If you're a new member over there on the upper left-hand side of the site there, it says free $60 account. There's also, if you're a new member, you get $60 parked in your account. There's also links over there at bangthebook.com. You'll find some Doc Sports banners. And you can click on that. It'll take you right to that free $60 page as well. So be sure and check it out. Check me out on YouTube each and every day. Just go over to YouTube, type in Doc Sports / Tony George. And I give a free video play each and every day to keep everybody updated on what's going on with my stuff.
Well, of course, you can follow Tony on Twitter at TGeorgeSports. Tony, appreciate the time as always, sir. Thank you so much for joining me. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, Adam.
Good stuff there with professional handicapper Tony George from Doc Sports. One more show coming your way here this week on Bang the Book Radio. That will be our Friday show, our Westgate Super Contest selection segment with myself and probably Wes Reynolds. Haven't cleared that with him yet, but should be with him. And then finally, Brent from DSI Sports with this week's version of the odds report. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.